Hello, everybody. This is Gary Benoit. And for this new episode of Beyond the Cover, we once again will be talking about the Freedom Index, the New Americans Congressional Scorecard that rates every member of the U.S. House and Senate based on their fidelity to the U.S. Constitution. And to discuss this, we have with us today Larry Greenlee, Christian Gomez, and Peter Brykowski. And with myself, this is the group that puts together the Freedom Index. So, Peter, I'd like to start off with you. Is the Freedom Index partisan? That is to say, is the purpose to try to determine who should be voted into Congress or who should be voted out?
No, the purpose of the Freedom Index is to show how closely Congress and its members are adhering to the Constitution in terms of the legislation they are voting on. So if it's not dependent on what political party they're affiliated with, you know, it could be a Republican, but if the Republican votes in ways that blatantly contradicts the Constitution, they're going to get a low score. And same with the Democrats.
Okay, but ultimately it's up to the readers, isn't it? The user of the Freedom Index to decide if they agree or disagree with how that congressman voted.
That's right. And also the readers could choose to influence the congressman to vote in a better way as opposed to trying to vote them out.
Right. So, Christian, do you agree with what Peter just said, that the Freedom Index could actually cause somebody to improve his voting record rather than being voted out of office?
Oh, absolutely. I've heard stories from across the country of JBS mm-hmm. members using the Freedom Index at a town hall meeting where their member of Congress from the House will be there speaking, and the copies of the Freedom mm-hmm. Index are being passed out at the door right before the event comes on because they think that you're with the campaign or something like that. And then people are raising their hands. Oh, I saw that you've voted here for this massive omnibus spending bill. What did you do that? Or I think you said you were pro-life, but you voted to fund Planned Parenthood in this vote here. And it puts them on the spot. And there have been cases where congressmen have actually done better the next time around. Their scores increase because they know that their votes are being monitored and watched by their own constituents. So it can be used to influence okay. a member of Congress.
Now, regarding the scores, Larry, this particular installment of the Freedom Index that we did, it's really a very unusual vote score because normally there might be a couple people get 100% and many get 0%. Usually the scores are pretty dismal. But in the case of this particular index that appeared in this issue of the magazine, the August 9 issue, there were a lot of 100%ers as well as a lot of 0%ers, a lot more disparity than usual. Can you shed light on why that is?
It's pretty clear what happened, and that is the two parties are voting as blocks in Congress. They vote along party lines. Mm-hmm. And the Democrats have control of both houses, so they initiate things by introducing bills that they want to pass. So what's happened is the bills that we rate, that we score, in almost every case, the Democrats have all voted for it, and the Republicans have almost all voted against it, mm-hmm. which leads to, in the case, most of these bills, or let's say all of them, I think that the Democrats were promoting this session, they're unconstitutional. So automatically, the Democrats on those bills get a minus sign, or anyway, they get marked down. And so the result is, for the 10 votes, the Democrats usually get 0% this time in this present index that we're talking about, and the Republicans get 100%.
Right. So we're obviously not picking and choosing. We're not trying to pick votes to make the Republicans look good and the Democrats look bad. But it is interesting, isn't it, that when you have a very radical Democratic Party, because the socialists have really taken over that party, and a radical presidential administration, and they're setting the agenda, probably it's not surprising that Republicans would be voting against that. But Larry, let's say a Republican, maybe Trump, maybe somebody else, were to get back into the presidency. What do you think would happen then in terms of the present disparity that we're seeing now between Republicans and Democrats?
It's not so much Trump being back in office, but it'd be if the Republicans gain control of mm-hmm. one or both houses. And then you start seeing some different degrees of support from the members of the two parties for the bills. So we start not having just 0 and 100% scores predominantly, but we have scores all over the map between 0 and 100.
And I do recall, Larry, that our freedom indices that we've done in the past, if you go back a number of years where you had had situations where you had majority Republican control of the House or the Senate and maybe Republican president, that the Republicans tended to get scores that were a lot worse because they were promoting the Republican version of socialism. Many of them were. And of course, if it comes from a Republican or a Democrat, it's still bad. And that was reflected in the votes, wasn't it?
Right. It's the whole thing of the rhinos.
Right, exactly. What does rhino mean?
Republican in name only.
Right. And that includes a lot of them. How many constitutionalists, Peter, do you think there are in Congress?
Well, in the Freedom Index for this Congress, there were, I believe, 49 representatives who got 100% and only four senators. But the number who are true constitutionalists is probably a lot less than that, considering the partisan nature of this Congress.
Right. Now, Christian, how many would you say are on the other side? How many would be doctrine or socialist? And we could think of a few of those, can't we, like OAC?
Yeah, it's easy to say that almost every Democrat is, and a good number of Republicans are even on the other side. But for certain, the House Progressive Caucus, which is one of the caucuses in the Democratic Party, the House Progressive Caucus is actually affiliated with the Democratic Socialists of America. So that caucus would have the Democrats that are for sure through, you know, full-blooded socialists, if you will.
Okay. Larry, where does that put the others? If we have a bunch who are doctrinaire socialists and we have others who are constitutionalists, where would you say the average congressman falls?
I guess, well, they vote sometimes constitutionally, sometimes not.
Right.
They're influenced by campaign contributions and things like that.
So they could really be influenced by an aroused electorate, couldn't they? Mm-hmm. If the pressure they feel from the constituents back home is greater than the pressure from the special interests, that could cause them to bend in the right direction or in the constitutionalist direction.
Right.
What I'd like to do now is just take a look at some of the votes, that we looked at in this most recent Freedom Index. And Peter, once again, I'd like to start with you. But I know every index has 10 votes for the House and 10 votes for the Senate. And again, we look at those from a constitutionalist perspective. And I know one of the votes that you looked at and wrote the description for had to do with federalized voting. So tell us what that's all about and what is meant by federalized voting, and is that constitutional?
Yeah, so the bill in question is the For the People Act, and that is H.R. 1 in the House and S-2093 in the Senate. And then there's also S-1 in the Senate, which is an identical bill, but just with a different bill number. Mm-hmm. And this bill would implement a sweeping, comprehensive federalization of elections, which is totally unconstitutional. Among other provisions, and this bill is hundreds of pages long, but among other provisions, it would force states to implement internet registration, automatic and same-day voter registration. It would require the states to implement these independent redistricting commissions, taking the power out of the hands of the state legislators. It would require them to have ballot drop boxes in every county of the state. And among many other provisions, it would require mail-in voting in every state. And there are so many other provisions, it's very hard to talk about all of them in such a short period of time. But Article 1, Section 4 of the Constitution makes it very clear that that the states have the primary authority over elections, over election laws. And the only area that Congress can possibly create its own rules is for congressional elections. And Federalist Number 59 makes that very clear for anyone who isn't convinced by the plain text of the Constitution, which is clear enough.
So the federal government were to get a hold of the election process, if they were able to put in all these mandates that are in this legislation, what do you think would happen to election integrity?
Well, it would plummet.
Right.
This bill, the various provisions like mail-in voting, internet, voter registration, same-day voter registration, all of that would severely compromise the integrity of our elections. So not only would it implement these terrible provisions from a policy standpoint, but it would be nationwide Right. Covering national, state, local elections on every level. So nobody could have confidence in the integrity of our elections under this bill.
Of course, there's a big concern about election integrity already. And actually, the evidence just keeps mounting that the elections really were stolen, or at least the presidential election was stolen from President Trump. But if this legislation goes through, we're obviously going the wrong direction. But the John Birch Society, does it not have a project to restore election integrity?
Yep, that's right. We have an action project titled Restore Election Integrity. You can find that on jbs.org under the Action Projects tab. And we also have several legislative alerts, both on the federal and state level, regarding election integrity for various bills in Congress and the state legislators that either improve election integrity or that undermine and destroy it.
Right. So there is a solution.
That's right.
And the solution is the ballot box. But in order to implement that solution, we have to preserve it. And the way to do that is to keep the federal government out.
Right.
And then to work with our state legislators. Let's take a look at some of the other votes that we used in this Freedom Index. Christian, I know one of the ones you wrote about had to do with police reform. In fact, that particular piece of legislation has the title, the George Floyd Justice in Policing Act. Is that an honest title for that piece of legislation?
Well, they put George Floyd's name on it so the bill could pass more easily. So if you oppose the bill, you oppose the legacy of George Floyd, so you look terrible. The Democrats constantly do that. They give a positive name to a bill that they want to pass, so if you oppose it, it's like you're opposing equality. You're opposing something that sounds virtuous. But anyway, the George Floyd Justice in Policing Act is not about justice. It's about, it's about maybe social justice, you could say. Essentially, it's the federalization of our police by putting more federal control and oversight over local police and taking funds away from even local police departments and transferring them to community organizations. That's in the bill, H.R. 1280, and it was introduced by Congresswoman Karen Bass of California, who's a full-fledged progressive. And actually, back in last year when the bill was first introduced in the previous Congress, 116th, it was then U.S. Senator Kamala Harris who helped craft the bill as well, along with Karen Bass in the House. So now, you know, Kamala Harris is in the vice presidency, and she's of course supporting this bill, which she helped to write.
Okay, and Larry, I'm just trying to think of one of the ones, one of the descriptions you did. I know you did coronavirus, for example. Right. Tell us about that.
Okay, I've got a few notes on the highlights of that. This is Coronavirus Appropriations, H.R. 1319. Its title was the American Rescue Plan Act of 2021. So in this bill, it followed the precedent that was set last year of passing or spending multiple trillions of dollars on unconstitutional programs in the name of coronavirus relief. So the overall spending in this bill is $1.9 trillion. So that's way above what bills used to be, but this is where we are now. A couple of highlights, the $1.9 trillion includes $242 billion in direct payments to 90 million Americans. These are the checks that we get right in our own bank account sometimes, usually. There's $325 billion in emergency direct payments to state and local governments. So that's just a couple of the big parts of it. The Senate passed H.R. 1319 on March 6th by a vote of 50-49. And you know, that's the split is almost even in the Senate, so that was right along party lines. The House passed this bill on March 10th by a vote of 220-211. Once again, I didn't check, but I think that's probably almost exactly by party lines, because I think that bill was supported just by the Democrats. So, we gave a plus score to the nay votes on this bill for two reasons. In passing this bill, Congress failed to address its fiscally irresponsible budgeting and appropriating process that produced an annual federal deficit of $3.1 trillion in 2020 and is expected to produce a $3.0 trillion deficit in 2021. So these deficits are three times larger than during the Obama presidency. We had $1 trillion annual deficits, and they were the record setters during those decades. And now we're at a level where having routinely $3 trillion deficits, three times as big as the ones we had during the Obama years. So these are extraordinarily, it's just extraordinarily reckless to be spending at this level. Then the second reason, virtually all of the coronavirus aid provisions in the bill are unconstitutional. They're not any part of the powers that were granted to Congress to legislate on. So we consider this an unconstitutional bill.
So it's fair to say, Larry, that the coronavirus was used as a rationale to ramp up government spending, and which one way or the other has to be paid for.
Right, and a lot of it is going directly to people and to state governments, local governments,
right,
for supposedly for coronavirus purposes. So it's not completely false, but it's completely unconstitutional.
Sure. And of course, a lot of people are hurting as a result of the coronavirus, but maybe it's more accurate to say as a result of the government response to the coronavirus, because the government, through the lockdowns, basically destroyed the economy.
Right.
And now that's being used as a pretext for even more government spending.
That's why people's incomes went down, right?
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't because they were sick.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I think you wrote about the impeachment vote, so I think you want to mention
that. Correct, and that's truly amazing, because when you look at the U.S. Constitution, it is very clear that to impeach a president should be based on a very high crime, such as treason or bribery or, you know, a high crime or misdemeanor. And actually what Trump was impeached for this last go-around, the second impeachment, had to do with claims that the Democrats claim were not true. Had to do with statements that President Trump made that the election was stolen. Had to do with what he said, for example, on January 6th, where he said we won the election. And and these things obviously are protected free speech. But at the same time, you know, according to the Democrats who brought forward the impeachment, that rose to the level of impeachment, and that's exactly what they did. And you know what? It's even more outrageous in the Senate. And of course, in the Freeman Index, we looked at both the House vote and the Senate vote having to do with impeachment. But impeachment is not for a private citizen. It's for government officials such as the president. And when President Trump was impeached in the Senate, he was not president at the time. He was a private citizen. So talk about a power grab, because if they can impeach private citizen Trump, they can impeach any one of us. So that's right. That was one of the votes. So we're out of time now, but thank you for having joined us. And of course, we do hope that people will take a look at the Freedom Index, and not just take a look at it, but that you'll use it to inform yourselves, that you use it to inform others, that you use it to let your congressman know when he's doing a good job or when he's doing a bad job based on his fidelity or lack thereof to the Constitution. And to see the Freedom Index, please look at the description, and you'll see links there where you'll be able to do that. Thank you again.